kind of leads to one of the questions we were going to ask, was just about your songwriting process. I know it's different all the time, maybe, but like, how do you generally come up with songs? Is it music first or words first, or is it always different?
Yeah, it's like any way you can get an idea. So it's like, yeah, sometimes it's a piece of music, sometimes it's an idea or a phrase, or it can be like a weird challenge you set for yourself. I have no idea how it happens, you know. You always figure you'll never write another song, and it always feels like you haven't written any songs until you look back and you're like, no, I guess I have written some songs.
Well, you wrote 14 there on this record.
Yeah. One of them was like, some songs get written really fast and some take a long time. And I don't necessarily subscribe, I don't know what the right scribe it is, but to the idea that like, if it doesn't come quick, it's not real. Some things can take years and they're just as like emotional as the songs that take 5 minutes are just as true or more true, you know? So anything, I'll hammer away at it for hours and hours and days, as long as it takes.
Maybe we can ask a bit about some of the songs on the record, Adam. Is there any songs you wanted to ask about in relation to this question?
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, in particular, I want to focus on The Weeping Man and just talk about the creation of that song, or perhaps what it might represent for you.
You know what? When I sat down to really write for this record, I had a couple of ideas in my head, but I knew I had a lot of stuff on my handheld recorder, which is how it's worked for however. Ever since I got busy, which was so long ago now, it's ridiculous, like 26, 7 years ago, I got really busy playing shows and then life and whatever. So I have a lot of stuff recorded on my, it used to be a cassette or a Zoom recorder or my phone. So I went to there, and you know what, I think it was on my phone, where I was just scrolling through. I was like, okay, now I'm going to work on some songs. And I tried a couple of things that were on my mind, and I just kind of go through my memos, and The Weeping Man was on my voice memo, like surprisingly complete.
Oh, wow.
And I had no memory of it until I checked audio message 0071. You know, like, yeah. I wasn't even named. And then, of course, when I heard it, I was like, oh, right, this weird thing. And I remember at the time, whatever, like a mood hit me on my acoustic. And I was like, I don't particularly like this or even know, but I'll hit record quickly. And I laid it down in one take. And then, yeah, until that day that I was starting to demo new songs, and I found that song on there, and I was surprised at how fully formed it was, and how the parts that I thought were throwaway were actually kind of really kind of cool, and it kind of caught me right away. And I immediately assumed that I would do a demo of it and never show anybody, because it wasn't necessarily where I was at. I was still hanging on to 2015, thinking like, this next record's gonna be like, yeah, let's do this, right? Instead of like, it does us instead of we doing it. And then The Weeping Man reminded me of like sort of like the characters in cities that you like. I don't remember what I was thinking when I wrote it. Like, I wasn't thinking anything, it was just a moment. But when I started like taking that voice memo and turning it into a song, just there's so many characters in cities that you see over and over again. In general, a lot of the people like that talk to me, maybe because I look at them, or maybe they, you know, like, so I know them, or, you know, do you ever have like someone when you make eye contact from like half a block away, and you're like, oh God, every time I see them, they look at me right into my soul, and I they see my soul, and I see them, and I see their soul. There's so many people like that. And so I kind of thought of the song as like an NFB movie.
Oh,
this character kind of walking down the street, like, and walking around like Ossington and DuPont, which has changed a lot. You know that intersection goes like this? That gas station's been gone forever, like one of the only downtown gas stations where I used, and then the Sobeys, where like I grabbed so many milk crates. And you got to think, in rock and roll, how many milk crates do you go through in like 30 years? I've gone through like 100 milk crates, you know? And like that studio building, and there's that other bridge. There's two bridges near it, that weird intersection. So like The Weeping Man kind of takes place there, kind of like sort of like kind of people that you see walking around. I guess it was, that's it. And it was pretty auto writing too. It was auto motto, you know?
You know, I think that's interesting too, because even though we talked about the title before, for me, there's a lot that you can get from that. Of course, there's the wordplay, the phonetic play, but I also took from that automation. And for me, The Weeping Man stood out because I think that and some other songs almost feature people or figures lost in this world of constant automation and movement.
Wow. Yeah, maybe you get it better than I do.
Well, that's just this one person's opinion, but...
Yeah, no, it's cool. I guess I hear what you mean. Like, it's definitely like, it's easy to be so numb. And so like, in a way, like what comes out is like whenever I can really latch onto something that feels super real, you know, and then it feels real enough in front of other people, which is a really hard transition, right? Because all of us, it's hard. I don't even know how I ended up in front of people because it's hard to do your thing in front of people, right?
Yeah. Or to be people. Genuine. Yeah.
And to show stuff. I don't mean to be like all like, wah, because I've had it really easy and really great in so many ways. So, but like, so yeah, it's, I know what you mean about that. So it has to feel like you have to get a feeling out of it, or I have to get a feeling out of it, or it's hard to do. Right.
Speaking of having a feeling from it, I know we talked about the pandemic earlier, and I've talked to so many people who've experienced burnout, difficulty even just being able to empathize with people now because it's just so tough. Do you find you have difficulty with that? Because it seems to me you're very empathetic in your songwriting, and yet I know so many people face that as a challenge.
Yeah. You know, I had a, I have kids. And my partner worked from home a lot. And yeah, the pandemic was terrible. I think I'm just haven't thought about it a lot. But I had so many people to take care of that that was kind of my experience, you know? So, about it, you know, I just find time from solo time was mm-hmm. kind of a big deal, you know? It's such a heavy question, right? Like, for you, like, you know, man, it was kind of awesome and beautiful and hard and weird. And, you know, like with my kids and trying to keep up like the sort of feeling of hope and like things are worth doing and, you know, how scary it was. Like, I don't know, you know, my parents are old and they needed to talk to me all the time. And you know, it just seemed like it was hard. Pandemic was really hard. You know, it was really hard. Also, was and weird was like going out to play shows, and it's weird how much things have loosened up even in a year, like for us, right? Because a year ago when we played our first run of shows in March, it was kind of like scary going out. And the very first show was at this bar in Ottawa where there was for sure like 150 people, low ceiling, and lots of local. Like there's like a section of local old dudes that just drank there, and it was kind of like a punk bar, the Dominion, and there were so many people there, and immediately you're just like, well, that's it, there's not even a point wearing a mask in here, you know, even if you wore it all day, you know. And that was a hard transition for sure. I don't know, like I'm finding it easy to forget. I got hit on the head when I was a kid, and I think it just makes me like optimistic. You know,
optimism, Dave, you know, I think maybe getting onto that, wrapping up the interview, we should talk about the show coming up at Fog Lounge because, you know, we're all looking forward to that.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, a friend of mine was like, why are you going to go play the Fog? Right. A friend of mine is a musician. I'm like, because magic happens with the Fog. And he was like, yes, it does. You know, he's like one of these guys who's really talented and is wondering like, oh, should I mean, not play live music anymore. You know, I guess everyone goes through that, which of course, there's no way he'll ever stop playing live music, right? So that was why he was like, he saw that we were playing shows. It's like, it's such a great feeling. I am excited to go down there. And it's last time we started our tour at the Fog and we showed up a little bit early and we got there and it's a bit scary driving into Windsor, like any city, and driving into the part of the town, which is maybe like the most intense. And we got to the Fog and no one was there. We pull up out front, we're banging on the door and nobody's there. And it's cold and it's gray and it's kind of creepy. And, you know, I'm old too. I'm like, what am I doing here? And then the staff member showed up and let us in. And we went in, started putting our gear on the stage, and there were no mic stands or microphones or cables. And we're like, hell, like, okay, everything's gonna be fine. We're all good. We're great. Everything's good. We start writing, you know, we were playing with James. Yeah. Hey, like, there's no mic stands here. We can't find anything. Anyways, eventually we hobbled it together, but there's definitely like, what am I doing here? Is this show even happening? Will anyone even come? right? Don't I have something more important to do? Like, I'm getting older. I could be helping somebody, right? Anyways, as slowly people started coming, we had some food, and then James Owell. I don't know if you remember, he played a solo set. He went on with no fanfare, just started playing. You hear music, you hear him play. His music's so, it was so calm. His energy is so great and grounded, and the songs were so great. Immediately, I was like, everything's going to be fine. And then all of a sudden, it's like, no, this is great. This is the perfect place to hear music. And then we had a really great show and whatever. Then that was the beginning of like all these shows that we played after that, because that was our first show. So anyways, going back to the fog.
Yeah. On the 11th, I did want to ask you one more question, but I don't know if we'll have enough time. I wanted to ask you about the Shotgun Jimmy thing on the record on Middle March and all the little messages that are in the album.
Yeah, you know, I sent the end of Middle March to Jimmy and I was like, play a guitar solo on this. And it had like tons of like, it had strings on it and like other keyboards. I was going for like something epic, and I was like, play guitar, an epic guitar, Jimmy guitar solo at the end of the song. And then he sent me that weird vocal.
About the band, yeah.
Yeah. And when I first heard it, I was like, oh, that's, it took me so by surprise. And I assumed that it, like, I wasn't sure that I would use it, nor like I didn't have a thought about it. And then, of course, it's like the most beautiful moment on the record. And I took all the other ish that was on that track off. And it's just a couple of my friends playing little ambient stuff and Jimmy.
Cool.
It's great. That's he, you know, it's and it's just Jimmy's magic, and it's so emotional, and we play it live and it's like this whole story, right? And he was just like imagining our friendship and being like, hey man, I'm gonna go buy a piano, bring your van and help me carry it down the stairs. Which is like, I thank the Lord for Jimmy, you know. And the other stuff is a voice message that he left me. The other stuff is like he left me this message saying it. Put me on your album. But he was just joking. He didn't know that I was actually going to do it. He only heard that message once, right, when he left it. But I listened to it like 100 times as I was working on the record. And then as I was mixing it, eventually I was like, dude, I've been listening. I could sing that backwards and forwards, you know. He left me another one recently going like, put me on your next album.
Well, Jose, I just wanted to say thank you for talking to us, and we're both definitely going to be at the show.
Thanks so much for playing our music.
You're listening to Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area. We're also syndicating across several different stations here in Canada. I'm your host, Dave Constantino, joined with Adam Pelche. And we're doing a show here for theme month, focusing on the music of Jose Contreras, playing a lot from his band By Divine Right. We also had an interview with Jose Contreras. We had it separated into two parts, and we just kind of heard the end of that and a couple more tracks. Ending off with a song from their latest sprawling double album, Auto Motto.
It's a fantastic record. As I mentioned previously, it did make our year in review episode when we were counting down our favorite records of the last year. We heard Smokies and Cannonballs. In addition to the interview, we also heard another pair of tracks from By Divine Right. We heard Highway Alien Paranoia from All Hail Discordia. That was an album released in 1997. And then Goodbye Paralyzer from 1999's Bless This Mess. And I'm glad you brought up the fact that we're being syndicated on various stations throughout Canada, because I know By Divine Right is kind of a linchpin, I keep saying, of Canadian indie rock, and I do think that's true, but they're more of an Ontario-bred and familiar group than I think throughout some regions of the Far East or West Coast. And for that, I'm really glad that maybe some people are being exposed to this music that they normally wouldn't be. And having a chance to check out By Divine Right, if this is your first exposure to them, then definitely check out their discography. If you are in the Windsor, Detroit area and you're hearing this and you really like what you're digging by listening to this episode tonight, please check them out at Fog Lounge, because they are performing tonight. Doors open, I believe, at 9 for that, and they're going to be performing live. Always a great show when they perform. And yeah, they have a great Windsor connection for, you know, playing shows here, having some friendships. And I do have to say, on their latest album, Auto Motto, the typeface, the typography was actually done by local artist Greg Maxwell.
The Ugly Vision, yes. Great local artist here. And yeah, you should come to the show if you can. And get the record, Auto Motto. Before the interview, the second part, we heard a couple more tracks. What did we hear, Adam?
We did. I think I just called them back.
Oh, you called them all back?
Yeah.
Was I paying attention?
No, I think you were...
Where am I?
I think you were Auto Mottoing yourself.
Where am I, Adam?
I don't know.
What day is it? Okay, I'm sorry.
It's By Divine Right Day. but as you mentioned, it isn't just music by Divine Right. There's been some other projects that Jose Contreras has been part of, including a solo album or two in his time. In fact, you actually had a chance to talk to Jose for one of those solo releases a few years back. You did a highlight of that album.
Yes, we highlighted the album. Jose doesn't have too many solo albums. He really didn't do it for quite some time. He's just been focused on By Divine Right. Mm-hmm. He's also a in-demand record producer and musician as well. So he's doing a lot all the time. We're going to start off the next set actually with a pair of tracks from his most recent solo album, At the Slaughterhouse. And I believe Slaughterhouse is the nickname of his recording studio in Toronto. But the songs on this album are much darker than we're used to from Jose, and they're very sparse. But they're really, really, they really are striking. And the first song we're going to hear is really just, it's an amazing song. And if you haven't heard it before, you need to hear this song, you need to hear this record. Grand Central Station, we're going to hear that. And we're also going to hear something from his 2014 self-titled release as well.
Yeah, they're very skeletal, very sparse records, as Dave said. And what I really like about them is that it is so alien to what you would expect from By Divine Right, with those really large, anthemic sort of sounds. You're going to hear something much more threadbare, very naked and emotional, but I think it highlights the great songwriting of Jose in a different way than By Divine Right does.
Yeah.
There's also another group associated with Jose.
Oh, yes. He's good friends with Shotgun Jimmy. He often plays in his band. And back in 2018, they put out an album together with a new group called The Heat Death. So we're actually going to hear a couple tracks from The Heat Death, including one they did here at CJAM FM several years before the album even came out.
Yeah, so let's make that our next set, where we highlight the solo career and this other project by Jose Contreras with The Heat Death on this episode of Revolution Rock.
Thank you. system destimulator. Sayonara till tomorrow. Little pill, I know you will take me away. Sayonara till just wanna see your face. I think about you at your place.